Welcome to the Inside Story podcast, where we dissect, analyze, and help define major global stories. I'm Mohammed Jamjoum. Healthcare workers have been celebrated as unsung heroes of the pandemic. But the World Health Organization says up to 180,000 of them have died of COVID-19. Many are burnt out and quitting their jobs after working nonstop for 2 years. So, what should be done to ensure doctors, nurses, and support staff get the help they need? All right, let's bring in our guests. Joining us live by Skype from Geneva, Howard Catton. He is the Chief Executive Officer of the International Council of Nurses. From Mumbai, Dr. Ishwar Gilada, an infectious diseases expert and Secretary General of the Organized Medicine Academic Guild. And from Melbourne, Grant Blaschke, an Associate Professor at the Nossal Institute for Global Health at the University of Melbourne. A warm welcome to you all, and thanks so much for joining us today on Inside Story. Howard, let me start with you today. It is estimated that between 80,000 to 180,000 healthcare workers could have died from COVID-19 since the beginning of the pandemic. That is a staggering number. Just how shocking is it to you?
It's a conservative estimate. It is absolutely shocking. I think the true figure could be higher. I think we could be pushing close to a quarter of a million. It's an indictment of government's failure to act to protect healthcare workers. These are people who were just going to work to do their job. But the real issue that worries me hugely here is that the actual number of deaths reported to the World Health Organization from countries around the world is less than 7,000. People are clapping, but nobody is counting. And that sends a message to suggest that it's just not being taken seriously enough. One death is a tragedy. It leaves in its wake families left without without mums, without dear dads, kids being orphaned. But when we get into this scale of the thousands, it appears that we just treat it as a mere statistic.
Grant, let me ask you, how traumatizing has this pandemic been for healthcare workers on the front lines fighting against COVID-19?
Yes, I think that the mental health impacts for health workers has been enormous. You know, it's been a mix of anxiety, you know, concern about getting the illness, the uncertainty. And I think as time goes on, you know, the chronic nature of this, that you get burnout, you get compassion fatigue, you get a bit cynical and despondent about things. So it's been very tough, and really we're very concerned about the psychological well-being of our health workforce.
Ishwar, let me ask you, also being on the front lines in this fight against the pandemic, from your vantage point, I mean, you just heard Grant there talk about the burnout, talk about the psychological impact. What do you see amongst colleagues? What kind of an effect has this had?
You see, we have two kind of colleagues. One, those who have not come to forefront, sitting at home, getting very, very scared of this pandemic, and they required a lot of pushing. So they came out only after a year or so. And secondly, people like us who are always on the forefront. And being in medical profession, we travel a lot for our kind of professional upkeep, conferences. So what has happened in the last 1.5 years is hardly any travel. We don't meet any colleague. We all are only video meetings or Skype meetings. So that kind of interaction is not a good enough for people who are always on the forefront, interacting with people, having friend circle, having professional circle. So there is obviously some sort of burnout, anxieties, some psychological problem, and more so by seeing more and more deaths and suffering. It is not only merely our patients, but sometimes our near and dear ones, family members. So that way, we have all been impacted as any other human being. In addition to that, being doctors, we are impacted all the more because we come across deaths and suffering and morbidity and mortality, both in figures as well as in faces, day in and day out.
Howard, your organization, the International Council of Nurses, calls the number of deaths of healthcare workers from COVID-19 a damning indictment of governments. Do you think that we're at the stage where we will start seeing governments do more?
I hope we will. I hope that this will spur them into action, because I'm really concerned that they've been looking the other way by not reporting, by not counting, pretending that the problem doesn't exist. But what we're seeing now very clearly are the consequences of the impact. You've just heard about the mental health impact, the mass traumatization, that's now translating to people who are leaving the professions, not just nursing, other health professions as well, who feel that they can give no more. Nurses around the world, we went into this pandemic 6 million nurses short. The impact of the pandemic, we believe, has increased that. And we think that we could be on the edge, on the brink of a global health workforce crisis. And if governments don't do something about that, if they don't recognize the issue, if they don't invest in recruitment and retention, we have no health services without our health care workers. There are some parts of the world, we've heard already of reports from Scotland, I think, from the US, where governments are having to bring in army personnel, army medics, to help to deal with the demands that that exist. Governments cannot afford not to address this issue, to invest in our health workers.
Ishwar, you just heard Howard there talk about how governments, from his point of view, really have been failing in their responsibility when it comes to protecting healthcare workers, when it comes to ensuring their safety, and to ensuring that the healthcare sector is able to help people and treat people. From your perspective, what can be done about this from a health management point of view?
I think the importance to healthcare and healthcare workers should be pan-year. It should not be only episodic. When there is a pandemic, you remember doctors and healthcare workers, and when everything is silent, you are not bothered. Similarly, for healthcare infrastructure augmenting, you just think that you require oxygen now, you require ICU beds now, you created some temporary facility, and then again forget. It is not going to be done like that way. Even looking at the World Health Organization, they had the report from May with them. They're sitting on that report for 5 months. Why they should take such a 1.5 year time to recognize what is the problem? World Health Organization is a health body. I think they are the most suitable body to understand what can happen to the frontline workers, doctors, nurses, technicians, and frontline staff. So if they also take 1.5 year time, we don't expect much more from our governments. Our governments are not technical people. And more so, during the thick of the pandemic, they all want to drumbeat for doctors. And later on, a lot of doctors or healthcare workers and staff, they are ill-treated by patients. There are a lot of assaults happening all over the country. There are laws in place, but those laws are not even enforced when such kind of situation come. When the mob is vandalizing hospitals, clinics, nursing homes, that time nobody comes to rescue of doctors. So whenever there is a big health problem, whether it was HIV or tuberculosis or MDR tuberculosis, and now COVID, people want to go away from medical profession. Those who are in the profession, they want to take leave or they want to relax. And those who want to join, they would think twice or thrice whether they should join health profession, because it is not a money-making profession anymore. And those who have some kind of sympathy, empathy, human service at heart or core of heart, that kind of breed is now less and less. People are mostly commercially interested. At the same time, they're also interested in safety and security. So I think this is a time to bell that cat and say that what is to be done for medical profession globally, not merely in India or Mumbai.
Grant, could you talk our viewers through some of the specific types of anxiety being experienced by healthcare workers around the world during the pandemic? And from your perspective, are countries doing enough to provide these healthcare workers with the appropriate amount of mental health care?
Yeah, so I think the first thing we need to say is that common sense will tell you healthcare workers need to feel safe. They need to feel that, you know, they're being looked after. And these are simple things. Before we get into psychological support, you know, are you vaccinated? Do you have access to protective equipment, appropriate protective equipment? And do you have ways to manage the sort of occupational sort of a violence and abuse that goes on with some very stressed communities. So this is the first step that governments have got to think about to deal with those really practical issues. You can imagine, as a health worker, fairly terrifying for anybody to be in that position without the proper safeguards. So that's the first thing I'd say. I think that secondly, governments can do a lot more to provide psychological support, to take it seriously. And I think I very much agree with Howard's comments that we're going to have a gap in the health workforce if we don't make sure that we're attending to the psychological things as well. So that can be things like peer support from colleagues, mentoring, young health professionals, helping them to learn to manage their boundaries, their professional boundaries, when they're working in this very difficult global pandemic, and to understand that they have to have realistic expectations for themselves and to be able to switch off and pace themselves, because this pandemic has turned out to be a marathon. We're not in the acute crisis anymore. We're in an ongoing sort of long-term management scenario. And remember, you can't fill someone else's cup if your cup is empty. So the health workforce need to understand self-care at the same time. So very important issues that we have to deal with.
Howard, there was a shortage of nurses even before the pandemic began. How much worse is the situation now?
The shortage before the pandemic was 6 million. We've got an aging population in many parts of the world. That's another 4 million nurses we know are due to retire over the next few years. This impact of COVID, the COVID effect on the nursing workforce, we've estimated could push us up to 12, 13 million nurses that we will need to replace over the next few years. That's about half the number of nurses in the world. There's 27 million nurses around the world. I think what Grant has highlighted here, though, as well, is that this is a health crisis, clearly. But there's also a rights crisis, a human rights crisis, the rights of nurses and health workers, which are not being respected. We just take this vaccine issue. There are some equally shocking statistics about the inequity of access to vaccine for healthcare workers. On the continent of Africa, we've done some work to look at how many health workers have been fully vaccinated, about 10%. In other developed countries, 80, 90% of populations we're up to in terms of people who are being vaccinated. We are asking workers, health workers in Africa, there are low levels in the Western Pacific as well, to go to work, to be at higher risk, and not to afford them the protection, despite the words that we're going to prioritize them, not to deliver on that. Our governments, G20 leaders, are meeting at the end of this month. They've made big promises about numbers of vaccines that they will share, but the process for delivering them seems very opaque to us. We've heard Gordon Brown in the last few days say that actually there are 500 million available doses around the world, some of which might actually expire, go out of date. He's called for an airlift to get them to the people who need them, to health workers. This isn't an issue about supply, it's an issue about sharing, and it takes us back again to our health leaders to deliver actions, investment to support healthcare workers, not just the continuing words and applause.
Ishwar, I saw you reacting to some of what Howard was saying there. Did you want to jump in?
Yeah, basically, we look at too much of inequity. On one hand, the countries like Canada, USA, European Union, Australia, they have acquired 3 to 4 times more number of vaccines than they require for the entire population. And they are allowing it to expire because the vaccines have a very short expiry, but they are not donating in very large numbers to Africa. We were initially started donating, but thereafter there's a hue and cry in India, and they said that domestically we don't have vaccine, how can you donate? But now we have done enough of vaccination. We crossed 1 billion yesterday, and we have been advocating that vaccine should rush to also Africa, where they are in very bad situation. So if 10% of healthcare workers are there vaccinated, I think it was a responsibility of not only of few countries, but globally, that they could have rushed the vaccine at least for healthcare workers. Because if they are not kept healthy, who will manage the healthcare crisis there? So if you look at in airlines, there are special seats for airline staff. In railways, there are special seats for railway staff. In government offices, there are all facilities for government staff. But for doctors, for nurses, there is no special special reservation anywhere. My both daughters are doctors. They were expecting they were delivery during the lockdown. And I needed to stand in the same queue, obtain an RT-PCR report, see that they get a bed, see that they are delivered properly. If this is the situation for a doctor in a hospital, then you can imagine what facilities we are getting. Nowhere. So I think we should prioritize. Like everywhere, I'm not saying that doctors should be treated like God, or they should be given full priority, but at least in the hospital, for the doctors, like we can fight for beds for others. But if we have to fight for our own bed, then it is a very difficult situation. So I think equity, very important. Science, very important. Today, the whole world is talking, particularly Western world, about booster doses. Where is science on the side of booster dose? Where is the equity on the side of booster dose? So on one hand, you want icing on cake. On the other hand, you don't want others to get even cake. So basically, this kind of inequity is not acceptable. And I think WHO should come out heavily, should make all sorts of efforts with the respective governments, whosoever is stockpiling the vaccines, so that vaccine could rush to the places where it requires the most, particularly healthcare community.
Grant, in this situation that we all find ourselves in, where healthcare workers are so fatigued, where they are experiencing so much burnout, how are hospitals and clinics around the world going to be able to hold on to their current staff and also to get new staff?
Yeah, I think it's a very important question, because what we're looking at is really a combination of a very serious occupational health issue. I mean, if you asked anybody who might be watching, you know, would you go into a dangerous workplace where you haven't got the right safety equipment or preparations? And most people wouldn't want to do that. So, you know, that's not a mental health condition. That's just, you know, the human humanity of just worry about a very real issue. So I think that that's the first issue that needs to be dealt with. I think that once we deal with that, there are things that we can do in place to make the health workforce feel supported, that it can be a resilient workforce, that you're bringing in young, new people as well who are mentored properly. And also, you know, open peer support for managing a very traumatic time. This is a very serious pandemic. And, you know, it's not like one person can somehow solve it. I mean, if you're working as a health professional, you really are finding yourself in a very difficult situation. One other important thing, which I think is a community attitude thing, is for people who are listening, if they find themselves interacting with the health system, either because of their own illness or their family or friends, you know, keep in mind that those health professionals who are helping you are really putting their lives on the line. You know, they're genuinely, you know, extraordinary people who are trying to do the humanitarian thing and do the right thing, but everybody's got a limit. So we need to make sure that we nurture our health workforces and build them up so that they can continue to provide the care for the community.
Howard, what needs to happen from your point of view to improve the situation for healthcare workers around the world? What are the steps, the concrete steps that can be taken?
I just wanted to I'll come to that, but just to also put on the table, I think that there is a really significant gender issue at play here as well. 60% of our health workforce are women, 90% in nursing are women. The historic undervaluing of the work that women do, inequalities in access to education in terms of career advancement as well, and this attitude that caring work, important as it is, doesn't really have any economic value. And I think one of the things that the pandemic has shown us has just how, if we don't invest in our health systems, if our health systems are weak and not working, the impact it has on our economic life, on our freedoms and abilities to go for a walk in the park, to go and see granny. That, I think, must result in a change in our thinking about spending on health. It's not something we do just in the good times when we can afford to. It is spending that is an essential investment in the economic security of all of our countries. We shouldn't also, I just want to put this on the table as well, with the issue of vaccines, not shy away from misinformation about vaccines and the anti-vax campaigners. I've talked to nurses, I've had their stories about how they believe that some of the attacks and the abuse that they have been subject to is a result of anti-vax misinformation. There's a direct line, I believe, between misinformation and attacks on our healthcare workers. Yes, we need to invest in recruiting more healthcare workers, but that will take time. Doesn't happen overnight. We need to really focus as much attention on how we support and retain the staff that we've got.
All right, well, we have run out of time, so we're going to have to end the discussion there. Thanks so much to all of our guests, Howard Catton, Dr. Ishwar Gilada, and Grant Blaschke. That's it for the Inside Story podcast. This episode was produced by Calvin Ng, Homera Chowdhury, Aiseba Mirzayeva, and Paul Taylor. Studio sound was by Yasser Rahmani. The program was edited by Vinish Velilath, Lynn Nguyen, and Joe DeFrias. Be sure to subscribe to the Inside Story podcast to catch every episode. Thank you for listening. We'll be back again on Monday.